Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, movies and movie music.
It's like when you watch a trailer, it's so rhythmic and it's so music driven, and the advantages of having that is so you really feel like there's like a tempo and a pace. I had written the track for Dune. Now it's just sitting dormant in the library. Half a year later, the track gets picked up for The Croods 2, which is a totally different style of movie. So I really like putting in unorthodox sounds in my music. I had this frozen cheese I bought from Costco in the freezer, and so I smashed it against the countertop, and that didn't help at all in terms of really unfreezing the cheese, but I was like, this is a sick sound.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. So I don't know about you, but there's nothing that gets me more excited for a movie than a trailer. I mean, just listen to this. Our first guest specializes in making the music that goes along with those trailers. This is composer Brandon Lau. How does composing music for a trailer, what kind of approach do you use that's different?
It's actually an interesting process. So one very unique thing to composing for trailers versus other media is that actually 90% of the time, there's no picture first. So what happens is that the music comes first, and then the editors will take the music and they'll edit the footage based off of the music that I write.
Okay, that doesn't make sense to me, right? Like, I know nothing this, but to me, I would be like, wait, why do you do it that way as opposed to just make the music compared to what you're seeing?
It's like when you watch a trailer, it's so rhythmic and it's so music driven, and the advantages of having that is so you really feel like there's like a tempo and a pace, and it feels a little bit like a pop song in a way, where like it's repetitive and it's catchy, which is really good for that kind of like 2.5 minute media format that it is. It's very effective in the way that it's a formula to kind of capture an audience's attention. So I think that's why it's typically done that way, to kind of have the music be the driving force instead of like the film and then the music following that.
You know, you talk about like, okay, so you're making it for a couple of minutes. Would that music then not work if you were making it longer, right? Like, oh, this music is great for 2 minutes, not good for 5 minutes.
Because the music comes first before the editing process, we want to make our music as editor-friendly as possible. If we deviate from the formula, chances are that the piece will be less likely picked for, you know, being edited to. So it's kind of usually a safer bet to really stick to the tried and true for that long.
So like you mentioned the formula, and you know, I don't want you to give away your secrets necessarily, but like, what do you mean by the formula, right? Like, you got to build it up for 30 seconds, then you slow it down, then you build it back up. Like, what's kind of the general formula that you're mentioning?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't consider it to be a secret because the answer is out there in the open. You know, everyone has access to all the trailers that's ever been published, and you'll notice that typically in like the first third of the trailer or maybe less, you'll have all this dialogue and exposition. You know, we want to know what the movie is about, and so typically what we want to do in the music for the first third of it roughly is that, you know, keep it sparse, keep it atmospheric. We really want to leave room for the exposition and whatever is going on. And then, you know, of course, there's like that huge cliche of like the single piano note, which has been leading the trailers for such a long time. Now it's maybe not as popular, but even so, the whole purpose of that single trailer note, it's like a small sound that is, I don't want to say unique because it's been now done so many times it's no longer unique, but a small sound that will capture the audience's attention. We call that like a hook, basically. So atmospheric, and then there's typically some sort of a hook where it's like a short melody or like a unique like sound. there's stuff like that. And in the second third, this is when the action kind of picks up, and typically how that is reflected in the music is that the tempo will be more, felt. You'll often hear clocks. That's a very, very common thing to hear in trailers now. The sound of ticking in the background, something to establish a sense of rhythm and pacing. And so you can feel the tension of the trailer is escalating. This is like the second, we call it the second act of the trailer. And then in the last act, you know, that's when like the characters are jumping between mountains, and then there's like a spaceship that crashes into the galaxy, and there's some crazy shit is going on. And then this is when we're leaving it all out on the table. You want to like your full theme, your full hook is like super wide out in the open, and you have these massive drums. And then, yeah, maybe at the end, there's a little like boom or something to, oh, coming out soon, theaters near you, whatever. And yeah, so that's like a very, very, very basic overview of the formula, I would say.
It kind of sounds like you get their attention, you hook them, you show them like, ooh, something's happening here. Then you kind of explain it a little bit like, oh, wait, what's going on? And then it's the end is like, oh, this could be good.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. We hook them. We keep them. What's happening? This is going to be good.
Dude, I'm going to hire you, man. You got the job. You know, you got it.
Now
yeah,
that I like, that's I never it. Thought of that. But when I look back on all the trailers, I can think of that. You hear that like ding, ding. And then it like, oh, right. It's weird how just that one sound by itself kind of snaps you to attention because it is alone.
Exactly.
It's almost like if they put yes. more things together, I'd tune it out as white noise.
Totally, totally, exactly.
So, okay, how did you find yourself in this specific thing? Where like, did you go to in composing and somebody said, you know what, Brandon, you are a trailer music composer? Or was this something that like you were always going to do this? Were you steered this way or was this the plan?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of different factors that kind of led me down this path. I will list one of them first is definitely I have a huge, passion and love for electronic / sound designy music. So I really like putting in unorthodox sounds in my music, like having a synth note do a lot of kind of bendy kind of things instead of just playing the notes themselves, like kind of bending between notes. I like putting in like, I had this frozen cheese I bought from Costco in the freezer. And there was one day that I was trying to like get the cheese to unfreeze really quickly so I could make lunch. And so I smashed it against the countertop, and that didn't help at all in terms of really unfreezing the cheese. But I was like, this is a sick sound. And so, I mean, that's like something that really draws me to music. And so, although I've always been interested in composing, I find that the vehicle of trailer music is really like a welcome space for my interest and passion. And because they're always looking for that one sound to capture the audience's attention. They're always looking for innovation. They're always looking for the craziest sound effects to kind of drive the tension and action of a trailer. So I feel like it was kind of a natural landing space for me to go to because of my interest in composing and also in the sound design space.
So is it a competitive industry?
It's kind of a, I guess, strange balance between, and so on one hand, like, yeah, it's very, very like small and you know, being in the industry for a little bit, you see a lot of familiar names come up, you know, because it's just such a small world. But, you know, because it's, I don't know, at the same time, it's just like everyone is pitching for the same movie, you know, like there's so many trailers, but there's only one like mega blockbuster or a handful of mega blockbusters that come out every year. And you think about like there's still like thousands and thousands of applicants and only like 5, 10 big, really, really, really big blockbuster movies every year.
Maybe there's not a whole lot of people doing it, but there's enough people who are good at it that you gotta be on your shit.
Totally,
right?
Totally. Yeah, and I was just gonna say that it's constantly growing, but in the early 2000s, it was really just a few big trailer groups, you could say. And then now, you know, there's just so many more because people are, I guess, like, you know, like, there's a greater awareness that writing for music for trailers is something that you could do. Like, I didn't know that before I started doing it, so.
I didn't know it at all. Yeah. I guess that's the kind of thing that, like, I assume they pull it off like the music equivalent of Canva. You know what I mean? I never thought of, like, well, somebody had to make that music.
Mm.
Now, is it, so, okay. For in the process, do you make the music and then submit it, or do you kind of apply for the job and then get it, or like how does this kind of work?
Two ways in which it can happen. Both ways use an intermediary. We call them the publisher. So the publisher kind of works with composers and they collect all our music and they're the ones with the relationships to the major studios. Yeah.
The publisher then buys it from you and the publisher sells it to the movie studio? Or the publisher just basically is like, hey, we got Brandon's newest one. What do you think? And if they like it.
To detail the process a little bit more, the publishers will typically say, because I love electronic music and stuff, so they'll be like, oh, Brandon, you know, try to imagine 8 sci-fi trailers. And then, like, I will kind of do 8 different tracks, and then we'll group them up in an album. We still call it an album. And then the publishers will then do the artwork for the album. They'll like kind of do all that. There's a lot of paperwork and other like nitty gritty stuff they have to do for packaging the album. They'll do all that, and then they will then pitch the album to all the major studios. I don't get paid anything if the music doesn't end up in any trailer.
I mean, if you want to go ahead and put a number on it, feel free to go ahead and put a number directly on it. But, like, how much would you generally get paid if it gets picked up? I would imagine that it's depends on the size of the movie.
I don't know if people will frown upon me giving the number away.
Any number that you said would equally surprise me no matter how much it is. Could you give... Mm-hmm. Okay. If you don't feel comfortable giving the number... How many digits are in the number?
5. This is especially if you are doing a major blockbuster movie, for sure 5. That's not even a question. The number can change. It can go into the 4 digits if it's like a smaller TV show perhaps or like a video game maybe. But if it's a major blockbuster movie, for sure 5 digits.
Wow. Now, have you ever had a situation when, like, hey, you know what? We've got the newest Animal Crossing game that wants this, or you can sell it to Batman. Like, do you get any say in that? And like, no. Let's take the bigger check here.
So, you know, that sounds like a suffering from success kind of problem,
right.
Which I have not had. But I will say, I think I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure this is how it goes because there have been some huge trailer tracks from other like bigger composers than me that have been used multiple times. So I don't think it's like just because someone buys this track doesn't mean that it's off the market forever. So one of my tracks landed in both. That was the one in both the Call of Duty promo and also the Destiny 2 promo. That actually was the same track. So it's happened to me as well.
Like when you make a new track, do you have a pretty good idea, or are you just kind of like, I have no, right? Like, ooh, this is getting picked up, or just kind of like, well, maybe.
You know, I always hope that obviously it gets placed. I can never know for sure, but when I'm done with it, I always feel pretty good about it.
Like then, do you compose around a certain genre? Like, do you specialize in a certain genre? Like, okay, I do action films and horror films and thrillers. Or do you just kind of do everything like, well, this might go in the new Pixar movie, or it could go in Scream 5?
Right. So I would say I definitely specialize in a little bit more of the darker side of things, like sci-fi, action, thriller, horror. I've done a few of those. And typically when I write my music, I will picture a movie or a video game from that genre. But I will tell you something funny, I guess. Do you know the movie Dune?
Yeah.
Okay, so
I was really excited about before, that. I was like, fuck yeah, dude.
I love Dune, yeah. But before Dune came out, before the trailers came out, you know, sometimes we will specifically target certain movies. And my publisher was like, dude, Dune is coming out. I want you to write a kind of like, you know how Dune has very specialized on kind of like the almost like a Middle Eastern percussion. That's like a huge part of the sound. And my publisher was like, okay, Brandon, please write something like that. And I was like, okay, you know, Dune is an awesome movie. I'm going to target this piece towards Dune. And I wrote it, and Dune didn't pick it up. So I was pretty bummed out about it because I had written the track for Dune, and it, now it's just sitting dormant in the library. And I think half a year later, the track gets picked up in an advertisement or a smaller trailer for The Croods 2, which is a totally different style of movie. But, you know, they've got those big drums, like kind of like wooden sounding drums in it. And it happened to work for The Croods as well. So to answer your question, I do typically target those darker movies and stuff. But you never know where it's going to end up. You know, you seriously don't know.
That's funny. But, like, it's weird how music can match things. How much it can match a mood. Like, why do you think that is, that you can hear something and be like, that?
Well, I would love to say that there's, like, some sort of, like, a deeper meaning behind that connection between music and association. But I mean, my answer has to be just through repetition in history, you know? Like, when we watch a sci-fi movie, typically the music is that kind of, like, strange synth score. And you know, like, in an action movie, there's going to be these epic drums. And I think just growing up and watching so many of these, like, two, I guess, separate things, the movie and the music, just shoved together all the time, we just kind of grow to learn that association, and then now we just pick up on it. But I mean, that I know that's kind of a boring answer, but answering honestly, I just think that's pretty much what it is.
That is interesting, though, you know, how that all kind of... Now, will you ever, or in the industry, I shouldn't say you specifically, but will the industry kind of move in certain trends where, like, ooh, this worked for this movie, so let's do that, but a little bit different?
Dude, that's a great question, man. I'm so glad you asked that, because trailer music is... Some people like to say that trailer music is kind of like the pop music of media scoring. In the way that we are such trend followers, because we're basically part of advertising, right? And so if something is not in at the moment, it's not going to catch anybody's attention. And so if you know, just even within the 2000s, trailer music has changed incredibly. The trailers from earlier in the 2000s to 2010, you will find like these huge orchestral led kind of trailers. And this is when they're still saying like in a world in a deep voice. You know, that doesn't happen so much anymore. But that whole thing kind of was happening at that time. And then later that became kind of cheesy. And then so now we have all these different, like, you know, you'll notice that there's pop songs now used in trailers. You'll notice that there's like hip hop and trap and EDM and you know, when dubstep was big, that was showing up in a bunch of trailers too. And so it really is such like kind of like a trend following genre. I would say the most recent one that I've been told to do a lot, I remember, I forgot what year it was, but when the Black Widow trailer first came out, the first Black Widow trailer, it had this crazy like synth melody that hasn't really been done before. And I remember all the publishers that I've been working with after that trailer came out, they're like, Brandon, you gotta do something like that, you know? And I had no problem with it because I loved it. I was so inspired by that sound that I just wanted to write doing that kind of stuff all day. But yeah, that's the kind of like, you know, exactly like what you said, definitely a trend following kind of thing. I would say the best example, sorry, I should have given this example first, was after Inception came out, the brrrr sound.
Yeah.
That was in every trailer, and it's still in like trailers today because it's just such a cool sound. So definitely like a huge trend following industry.
I've always been amazed at how you can do something unique and everybody's like, nobody's touching it. And then one person does it. Everybody likes it, and suddenly you're a genius. Like how you can go from moron to muse in a second is just amazing to me. You just got to get the one person to sign on, and then everybody's like, "Oh, I had that idea too."
Yeah.
So, like, for example, like how many tracks would you, do you have out there right now? Not, I guess, in both in terms of like tracks that have been purchased and are being used either by movies or video games or TV shows or whatever, and ones that you have done. Like, what's the percentage? I've made 100 and I got 10 picked up, or fill me in, I guess.
Yeah, that's a great question. I want to say I'm anywhere between 40 and 70, maybe somewhere between 50 and 60. I don't know. We're somewhere around there in terms of the amount of tracks that I've created. And then the tracks that have been picked up in any sort of way, I want to say anywhere between 10 and 25, somewhere around there.
That's honestly a lot more than that's a better percentage than I would have assumed, right?
Right.
Like that sounds
First of all, first of all, thank you. But I do feel like I should clarify when I say what I just said. So we talked about money a little bit. And to clarify, you know, first of all, not only have not all of my tracks been purchased by big blockbuster movies, but also, you know, there are like other things where tracks sometimes are used on TV, and the way that that pays out is like totally different. And it's, you know, sometimes I get used in like small little tiny commercials. They might use like 2 or 3 seconds of some. So like there are a bunch of like smaller usages too. And I'm including that in the statistic that I just gave you. So just to clarify,
but
I'm not like some like major hotshot, because that would be a crazy statistic.
Yeah, but still, it's like, all right, so I got a couple of home runs, but I get on base a lot. Like, that still sounds pretty good. I mean, it's not like nobody has yet picked up my hour-long soundtrack of boat horn noises. Now, is there any problems with people ripping off the music?
So oftentimes, you know, words are kind of horrible at describing music. And so when a director wants a specific piece of music, they will often employ what's known as a temp track, which basically is like if they're doing a commercial, for example, they will put in an already existing piece of music in first, and you know, to kind of get the feel of it all, and then they'll pass it on to the composer, and with that already existing piece of music in, and be like, oh, I want my commercial track to sound like this, and so it'll be like a reference track, so the composer knows what the director wants. And yeah, I found that one of my tracks, actually one of my composer buddies was a friend of mine, was doing a job for a commercial, was writing a track for a commercial, and the reference track that he received was one of my tracks. So in a sense, he was being paid to rip me off. Like, you could definitely make an argument for that. But, you know, that's done so often in the industry that, you know, I don't take any offense in it. If anything, I'm quite flattered, honestly, that the director, you know, wanted something similar to that. I just wish that the director asked me instead.
Yeah. But why would they use a reference track and not just like, hey, I want something like this, but not this? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me, right? That's like I want a ham sandwich. Or like, I want a sandwich, and I want it to be a ham sandwich, but I don't want this ham sandwich. Like, make me another ham sandwich.
Right. I mean, in terms of how temp tracks are used, that kind of differs from director to director. The two that you listed out, kind of using it like this and I want this, that happens, you know, that's kind of like the spectrum of how temp tracks can work.
Okay.
Right.
Are you ready for some harder / listener submitted questions?
Let's get to it, man.
Track, or I guess trailer music that you are most proud of.
That's a fun question. I will give you two answers, I think. So I will first give you, I guess, the trailer that I'm most proud of, which is, I guess, the piece of music that I've written, but also factoring in how it was used and the medium in which it was attached in. And that would be my track Collapsing Sun, used with the Destiny 2 Beyond Light trailer. And I honestly, that placement changed my life, because I've noticed something about the difference between doing a video game and movie trailer. And I've done a couple of movie trailers, and typically if you go down to the comments, it either be like, this trailer sucks, or this trailer is great, can't wait to watch this A-list actor do whatever, whatever, whatever. But, man, video game fans are so... I think video game fans love music. I guess because the kind of interactive aspect of the music while you're playing the video game is so important to the experience, that I've noticed in many video game trailers, sometimes, like, if you go down to the comments, there'll be like, track name, you can thank me later. There'll be like comments like that. And after the Destiny trailer that I did was very, very popular on the day that I came out, was trending like number 4 or number 3 or something like that. And then I just looked down at the comments, and they're like, oh yeah, dude, the track here is Collapsing Sun, Brandon Lau. And I, like, that literally actually changed my life in a very literal way. Because if you think about like people listening to music on Spotify and stuff like that, there's a very few amount of people who would listen to maybe like trailer music for fun, right? So it typically doesn't get that much traction on Spotify. But because of the people putting those comments on the YouTube trailer, it kind of like increased my numbers and viewership by a ton. So I'm very, very, very thankful for that one. My favorite track that I've created just with the track alone, I have a new track called The Needle on my album Hand of God, and I just like that one because it's kind of inspired by a very clean edited style where I'm not using a lot of reverb or like kind of like sustained sounds, and it's very, very clean and very precise. And just from a technical standpoint, I was very proud of the track that I made.
So, all right, this is my like you kids today, how are you moment, but like, how are you? Are you playing any instruments, or is this, it's all computer based?
Yeah, so the music that I do is definitely, if not 95%, 100% computer based, but I would say the part that is most like playing an instrument for me is that those synth sounds that are featured in my track, I'm kind of a stickler for designing my own sounds.
It's really an instrument of its own if you think about it.
Totally.
Is there one in the industry, is there like a trailer music in the industry that like people look at and say, that is the best?
There are a bunch of trailer tracks and composers that I look up to. One being... there's so many. I'm just struggling to pick one. But, you know, for the sake of time, I'm just going to pick one I really like. Mark Petrie, I've been listening to this guy before I knew I wanted to do trailer music, and he has a track called Redshift, which landed in both Avengers Infinity War trailer, if I'm not mistaken, and also the Venom trailer. And that track to me is really, really inspiring. I think it's a perfect lesson on how to develop a catchy hook and a catchy melody. I think it's done extremely, extremely well.
Trailers that you can think of in which the trailer music is synonymous with the movie. I think of like Pineapple Express, that like where the movie, the music is more popular than the movie.
For sure, yeah. Oh, I can think of a couple, but they're kind of cheating. So I actually have a couple movie posters behind me. The one here is for a movie called Annihilation. And that movie, it came out, I think, in 2018. And the trailer had this one sound that was absolutely crazy. And it's kind of like the theme, like it's about aliens and sci-fi stuff. And so like the kind of the alien theme from the movie actually made it to the trailer. This is very rare, by the way, that actual music from the movie gets put into the trailer. But that was one of the instances in which they chose to do it. And I can definitely see why, because that theme for the movie was very hook-like, you know? And so kind of going back to what I was talking about in terms of hooks and stuff, it totally worked for the trailer music medium. So it's a little bit cheating because, you know, the sound was actually in the movie. But I think that trailer music was, I thought it was really awesome.
How do you feel when you tell someone that your music was in a trailer or video game and they say, never heard of it?
I mean,
I thought that was such a great question.
Dude, I mean, I wish people would ask these questions more often, man. I mean, I love the unapologeticness of it. I mean, I don't make too much of it, man. I definitely, that happened to me a lot when I was first starting out, especially because the things that my music ended up, even I was like, what the heck is it? I had to like look it up when I feel like I've literally never heard of this thing before.
Money's still green, though.
You know, I really don't take any offense to it at all. You know, like there's just so much media outflowing in the universe. Yeah, I don't expect everyone to know everything, so it's totally fine.
Are there parts of trailer music that people should specifically listen to that may give away secret clues within the movie or game? Like, if you're really paying attention, the one that I can think about is, like, in Star Wars, where they play, mm-hmm. like, the Darth Plagueis movie, the music, or the at a certain time, like, are the clues ever hidden in the trailer music itself?
Yeah. So back to kind of what I was saying, unfortunately, movie and, like, okay, the movie / video game and the trailer itself are completely unrelated. You mentioned Star Wars, and, like, I also talked about Dune earlier, and those are, like, these huge IPs that they really want the themes to be involved in the trailer. Sometimes they'll do it, and that's where you're going to get your clues for things to listen to and that kind of thing. I would say more so on that question, it's more like a disclaimer coming from me that they are not related, because sometimes I'll look at the comments, for example, for the Destiny trailer that I did, and they'll be like, oh yeah, dude, I hope I can buy this soundtrack from Bungie. And I'm like, dude, I'm so sorry, man. I'm not affiliated with Bungie at all. I'm not affiliated with this video game. This is just a one-time association.
They're just picking up like, right? Like,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But
so,
will you ever have somebody come to you and like, hey, man, we love this, we want to use it, but you just change this one part?
Totally, yeah. So I didn't end up getting this trailer, but I made it to like a really, really, because they're eliminating
different go through the process, pieces and stuff. Right?
So I made it pretty far into the process for the movie The Grudge. And The Grudge makes this like throat noise.
I can't handle horror movies, man. The scariest movie I've ever seen is like the old King Kong, and that was just like, nope, that's too scary for me.
Dude, I totally feel you. But yeah, anyways, The Grudge makes this like really weird and then kind of like aggressive throat noise, and they actually sent me the direct sample of that throat noise from the movie, and they're like, please put this in your track for the trailer. And I was like, yeah, dude, this is awesome. I would love to use this in my track.
Okay. This is the thing that I want to do. This is when I have arrived and my career is complete, or it is like I am established now. Is there something that you're looking at and be like, this is what I want?
So, that's a great question. I know I just spent the last hour talking to you about how much I love trailer music and stuff. So for me, I'm still trying to make the transition into doing more movies or TV or even video games, for example, and having my income more based in that realm.
Oh, composing the whole thing.
Totally. Yeah. Because that, on the other hand, you know, is actually the narrative. It's actually the story. I get to talk with the director about, okay, this character is feeling this. You know, how should their music reflect that? And every film, every scene is going to be different. And I know I'm going to have so much fun kind of delving into that creatively and kind of growing as a composer and an artist in terms of developing my musical ability, I guess. And so I'm definitely looking to move more into that. And to strictly answer that question, I guess I would love to do, I guess, a major studio film or TV show. Obviously, you know, that's very, very, very competitive, and I'm still a ways away from that. But I would say that's probably when I would feel, okay, I've made it, and this is my career, I guess.
I mean, it seems like you're off to a good start, right? Like, this is how you kind of get into it, right? It's not just like, hey, I filled out this job application to be the next John Williams.
Totally. Yeah, no, definitely, you know, if only, you know? Yeah.
He's good. Like, that shit's good. Like, right? But, okay.
He's the GOAT, honestly. Yeah.
When you look at that kind of a style of music, whenever you're talking about trailers or video games or doing the whole movie or whatever, does it really match in the sense that, like, which one of these is happening first, or is it happening at the same time? In which, is the music making the mood, or does the movie make the mood and then the music supports it? Right? Like, which one's making me feel a certain emotion more? Because in some ways, I honestly kind of think it's the music. You know, like, you've seen those things, maybe, like Star Wars without John Williams, and you're just like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. Well, first of all, as a composer, I really appreciate you saying that. It makes me feel important.
I think it's, without the music, it's like a laugh track in a comedy. Like, I don't really, was that funny? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, the
exactly.
music really
yeah,
does
no.
set it.
Mm-hmm. I would say, so if you're talking about it from an audience digesting it kind of way, then I would say, obviously I'm very, very biased, but the music is really a huge part of what you feel, kind of like that's the emotion. It's in the music. But before, while we're making the movie, I think as a composer, I'm definitely looking to play a supportive role. I'm not trying to, be like, okay, this is my movie, actually. You know, you're going to feel how I feel. So I'm definitely going to, like, try to, whatever the director wants and how that story is created and how it's meant to be perceived in the words of the director, that's always what I'm going to be trying to push forwards.
I want to thank Brandon so much for joining us. If you want to connect with him, we have linked to him on our social media accounts. We're Profoundly Pointless on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram, and we've also included his information along with links to his music in the episode description. Okay, now let's bring in John Schull and get to the pointless part of the show. Do you have a clothing schedule? Like, do you wear generally the same clothes on Monday, and then you're going to wear it again on the next Monday, or do you kind of just do whatever during the week?
I wouldn't say I have a schedule. I definitely try not to wear the same pants back to back. You know, you never wear the same shirt twice in 1 week. But pants, you can usually go every other day and you can get away with it.
You've never worn the same shirt twice in a work week? You've never pulled like a Monday, Friday? I've done that.
I have shown up to work with my shirts inside out, which is pretty embarrassing.
What kind of shirt are we talking about? If you're going to tell me that you had a button-up shirt, dress shirt on inside out, you should probably, like, get Child Protective Services to come take your kids, because we're talking about some serious problems here.
No, not just like a polo, just like a polo. Nothing, no button-ups. I never had it that bad.
How'd you get a polo shirt on inside out, though? Because those have buttons on it. You didn't notice that the buttons were inside out?
It's actually not as difficult as you think it is to do that with a polo. If you're tired or drunk or still drunk.
Okay. But I feel like the collar would give it away. Like, didn't you have trouble with the collar and notice that something was wrong? Because that's where I feel like you would run into difficulties with the inside out polo shirt.
No, I don't remember any difficulties with it.
Wait, are you not holding the microphone anymore? Remember? For people who aren't familiar with this, John had a revolution for about two or three episodes when he started holding the microphone, and now he's not holding it.
I'm holding it down kind of like what you do. That way I'm not talking into the microphone.
All right, I think we're on. I lost track of how many weeks we've been doing this, but it's getting up there. It's got to be in the double digits now. You're still amazed by the idea of a microphone. But now that you're not holding it, you're holding it too far away. You gotta split the difference.
There, is that better? Does this sound better?
No, it's perfect. Can we talk about your floral arrangement that you have? I
thought you didn't want to talk about it.
It's become unavoidable. For people who maybe can't see this, John has a floral arrangement behind him. And my question for you is this. Did you put the floral arrangement there on purpose, thinking it would add to your background? Was it already there and you chose not to move it? Like, walk me through the thought process on the floral arrangement, because it looks kind of like, if it was just happened to be there, it's fine. But if you purposely put it there, you didn't do a great job.
It is there just because it is there. I did not put it there. We are cleaning out our basement because we're having some work done in it. And that's obviously where my wife decided whatever that is should go. I don't even know what flowers those are.
Do you work in silence, or do you have to have something on around you?
I don't think I can sit in silence. Have you ever just tried to sit in silence recently? I can't do it.
Yeah, I mainly work in silence, actually. If I'm doing something where I need to concentrate, I mainly do it in silence. I don't usually have a TV or music or anything on.
Also, I just realized how pale I am.
It's offensive.
I mean, it is bad. I look like Twilight.
I don't know what you're doing over there. Like, have you not seen... When's the last time you saw the sun there, Vampire's Assistant? Maybe you should invest in tan. Have you ever been tanning?
No, I've never been tanning.
Have you ever laid out in the sun to get a tan?
Yeah, actually, funny story. The wife and I, when we were just starting dating, went to a beach in St. Petersburg, Florida. And, I played it up all macho and machismo. Like, I don't need suntan lotion, you know, or whatever. We ended up getting severe burns. I mean, severe burns.
Yeah,
she got it worse than me.
Well, what kind of person thinks that they're more powerful than the sun?
I don't want to answer that.
Right? Like, what's your thought process in not putting, like, you're going to take on the fucking sun? Like, it's going to win. The sun is going to beat you.
Well, right? When you say it like that, I mean, it does sound a little foolish, but...
That's one of the stupidest things that I could ever hear somebody being made fun of. Is you're going to put on sunscreen? Yeah, I'm not stronger than the sun. You think you're going to win?
I mean, it makes
sense. You're going to take on the sun and win? Like, no, you're not.
Makes sense when you say that. However, I swear to God, I think my wife had second degree burns on her stomach and back. I mean, it was that bad.
How long were you guys out there?
At least 3 hours.
Just roasting.
Just roasting.
Did you fall asleep? How did you not feel it?
We fell asleep for about an hour. And then when you wake up, and anyone who's ever been extremely sunburned, as soon as you like try to move, feels like whatever part of your body is sunburned, it just feels like a leather like swatch. and you're like, I done fucked up.
At what age should you not get a sunburn anymore? Like, you should have learned your lesson and in all possible manners by this age. Because I can understand that you're out as a little kid and you don't know about it. And then maybe you go skiing and you don't realize that, the sun's pretty bright up there and you're going to burn faster. Like, at what age should you no longer get a sunburn?
Well, first off, I didn't realize you get sunburn skiing. That's interesting.
It reflects off the snow. You can get sunburned pretty fast up there. Higher altitude, sun's more powerful. Don't fuck with the sun, man.
If anyone takes anything away from this episode, don't fuck with the sun.
Don't fuck with the sun. It's going to win. It's about to melt the whole goddamn earth.
I'd probably say 25. That's probably a good cutoff.
I can give people getting some serious burns in college. Like, all right, you kind of forget about it a little bit. Your parents aren't there to remind you. I'm going to say 20. As soon as you graduate college, you should no longer be getting a sunburn. Like, that's when you should be fully prepared in any kind of situation to not get a sunburn, is once you graduate college.
Have you ever gotten a tan, like gone to a tanning bed?
Yeah, but I used to work in TV where I basically had to.
Except you worked in Florida where you could have just gone outside.
I started off in Kansas. And they were like, you need to be a little bit tanner, son. I feel like I could actually tell this story now, is that I was once called into my boss's office and told that I need to look older. And then a week later was called back into the same boss's office, which with his boss also in the room, and asked why I wasn't doing a good job of looking older. It's been a week. What the fuck do you want me to do? All right. Are you ready? You ready? Let's move on.
You ready? I'm having too much fun with this microphone, man. I don't know if it was a good idea.
Did you just do it in a circle? Do it again. I actually want to see if that was kind of cool.
I said, I'm doing it in a circle, if you know what I mean.
What if you do it like rocking back and
I'm not going to do that
forth.
Motion.
Oh, yeah, that's a little weird. It's a little weird.
Yeah, everyone at home.
What if you go side to side?
Yeah. You are doing this like that, if you know what I mean.
Can you talk without moving your lips? Try to do the shout-outs without moving your lips.
I think so. Does this count? I think I'm doing it.
It's close enough.
I mean, I'm not doing all this. Okay, here come the shout-outs for you guys. Tom Herkart. Dan Van Hoosen.
So maybe we should actually just give these people, you know, I mean, they put time into listening to the show. Maybe we should actually put some, show them some respect.
All right, Tom Burkhart, Dan Van Hoosen, David Basinger, Marcos Ortiz, Zane Wong, Eddie Almeida, Jorge O, Amy Moss, Julie Chambers, and Kyle Reynolds. I appreciate all you guys for checking us out.
How old do you think a guy named Kyle Reynolds is?
If I remember his Instagram account, double shout out to you, Kyle.
27. I'm going to go say 27.
I was going to say 27.
Yeah, it sounds like a 27-year-old name, right? Like, 17-year-old's not going to be named Kyle Reynolds, and a 37-year-old's not going to be named Kyle Reynolds. That is a specific late 20s name.
Kyle, you ever seen the George Carlin skit about names?
No.
All right, well, then I guess I won't bring it up to you then.
That's one of these things that John loves to bring up along with Deserted Island is the George Carlin skit about names. You've brought it up. You've tried to bring it up like 5 or 6 times, and that's why it's my mission to shut it down every single time that you bring it up.
You know what? And fuck Tucker's friend, Kyle. That's all I'll say. Check it out. It's a fun skit. It's funny, man. R.I.P.
I'm a cousin named Kyle now that I think about it. Way to disrespect my family.
Is he 27?
I actually don't know how old he is.
All right. Got a couple of.
Everybody has the close cousins and then the other cousins. Right? And, right? You're usually closer with the cousins on one side of the family than you are with the cousins on other side of the family.
Yeah. I don't really have a lot of cousins that I talk to. I think there's maybe 2 sets that I talk to more than once a month. Is that normal?
Oh, I probably haven't talked to cousins in months, if not years. I have cousins I don't even know what their names are. Like, literally don't even know their names.
Do you have a cousin named Eddie?
I don't. Is that from a movie?
Yeah, man. Cousin Eddie. Never mind.
Good one.
Yeah, I mean,
well, what movie is it from?
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, man.
Is it Lampoon or Lamphoon? I always thought it was Lamphoon.
No, I think it's Lampoon. National Lampoon. Yeah, I think it's National Lampoon's.
Doesn't it make more sense to be Lamphoon?
I don't know what a Lampoon is. I don't know what a Lampoon is.
I always assumed it was Lamphoon. It's not National Lampoon's?
I mean, maybe. I guess. I don't know. Where's Chevy Chase? Maybe he could settle this for us.
Yeah, man.
All right. Let's see here.
I hate good movies, too.
You don't even watch movies. Would you rather be known as the greatest porn star alive or the greatest whatever sport you want to say, greatest basketball player ever?
Well, the greatest basketball player ever, because the difference there is probably $40 million. Right?
That's, I don't know, man. I feel like if you're the greatest of anything, you're getting paid, and porn star would be pretty.
You're not making that much. I don't actually think the men make very much money. I don't think that they do. I mean, look, they're doing fine, but I don't think that they make nearly as much money as the women.
I don't know, man. You know, I never have to worry about it. There still might be hope for you. I mean,
but have you ever watched an adult film and studied the man's technique? Like, ooh, that's good technique there.
I mean, you know, I'm sure we all have done, you know.
Like, you do two longs, one short, two long, one short, two long, one short. Like, have you ever studied the technique? Like, what makes a man the greatest porn star?
I don't know. I guess.
I just want to know what your criteria would be. I'm not saying that you have to have, how would you evaluate it?
Well, I mean, just thinking back to the most famous porn stars of our generation, I mean, one of them's nickname was the Hedgehog.
I don't even know who that is.
Ron Jeremy.
That was his nickname?
Yeah, the Hedgehog, man.
He does look like a hedgehog.
Yeah.
Okay, but how do you quantify or qualify what in your mind would be a good male porn star?
I mean, for me, it's about longevity, right? And anybody can come in and make a splash right away. It's having a prolonged career and, you know, being around for decades.
I don't feel like that would really be that difficult for a man to have longevity in the adult industry. Like, what's difficult about it?
I mean, I think you have to be at the top physique.
Jeremy, did not have a good physique. So, number one,
it was the 70s and 80s. I mean, I would like to know, out of all the adult film people we've had on here, you need to ask the next one. Like, is Ron Jeremy revered as one of the greatest, like, internally within the business? I'm curious to know what somebody with insider info would say.
You know, we have a kind of an answer to that. There was a woman that is an intimacy coach and also stars in adult films, Dee Siren. She was on, call it five, six episodes ago. And she said that she didn't even recognize the men by their dicks. She didn't know who they were, but she's like, oh, yeah, I've seen that dick before. And she wasn't like, look, don't read into that in any way. If you think about it, like, you probably see a lot of people in your average business. And if maybe you don't always recognize that customer by their name, but you maybe remember something else about them, you probably remember a defining feature about that person. Well, that's the defining feature that she happened to remember.
You remember your coworkers for their faces or maybe their body builds. I mean, her profession is that, right? So it makes complete sense to me that that's how she would maybe be able to pick somebody out.
Ooh, here's a question. Okay, if you were to say that, all right, I know 1,000 people's names, how many people, though, beyond that, do you think that you could recognize? For example, for me, I would probably say that number is double. If I know 1,000 people and their names, I probably could recognize 2,000 people.
Man, I mean, I could probably go more than double. I mean, for sure, double. That's a good place to be, I think.
It might even be triple if you honestly think about triple. It.
I think it'd be triple or even quadruple.
If you said 5,000, I wouldn't be shocked. Like, okay, maybe. That's crazy to think that you might know and recognize 5,000 people throughout the course of your life. You're like, oh, yeah, I know that person.
I mean, like, I have, like, 1,900 friends on Facebook. I could pick all them out, and there's a lot more people that I know I could pick out. So I think it's fair to say double or triple.
That's kind of crazy if you think about it. Like, 5,000 people, that's a lot of fucking people. Like, if they were all in a room together.
That's a lot of people.
And you probably really only like 5% of them.
Shit, might even be lower than that, to be honest.
That's crazy. All right.
All right, what are you more excited about? The Taco Bell Mexican pizza coming back? Or the spicy chicken nuggets at McDonald's?
Depends how spicy they're going to be honest with you. If we're talking on a scale of 1 to 5 and 3, if they're a 3, then I'm going to be pretty excited about spicy chicken nuggets. But if they're going to be real hot, like, ooh, mm-mm. If they are a little bit spicy, then yes.
I think fast food chicken nuggets are overrated.
Really? Have you ever been to Chick-fil-A? Because you would take that back in a heartbeat if you've been to Chick-fil-A.
Never had their chicken nuggets, but I can tell you their chicken sandwiches are overrated.
Oh, well, you got to try their chicken nuggets. They're pretty good. I don't know how you go to Chick-fil-A and not get chicken nuggets. It's like going to Burger King and getting a salad or getting chili. Oh. Nobody knows what's in that chili, and nobody should be eating it. Or Wendy's or whoever has the chili, nobody should be eating that.
You just made me think of a story. I used to work with somebody who was a larger person and always went to the fast food route, but I would always get, you know, like a salad. But then, like, an extra large Coke to go along with the salad. I never understood the dynamic there, but maybe it's healthy. I don't know.
Maybe he used to have a burger and an extra large Coke, and he was cutting down in the ways that he could. I don't know why you have to belittle somebody's progress.
I wasn't belittling. I just didn't. I never understood it. I don't even know. I need to check up on him. I don't even know where he is.
He's probably really wondering why you're getting in fights in a drive-thru. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that happened. It wasn't the drive-thru, though. I was inside the establishment.
I've never, ever had any sort of public altercation with an employee of any sort of business. And you've had how many now?
Many. At least a solid dozen. That's, like, for sure.
Are you a Karen?
I am not a Karen, no. Because I respect – it's not that I don't respect the workers or what they're doing. I don't walk in there, you know, with an attitude already or some kind of bias. I react based upon the situation that is presented to me. It's like driving for me.
I don't know, man. Let's see. If you've had more – honestly, more than 5 altercations with an employee at any kind of a business, the problem is really starting to point towards you. I don't know what you're doing, dude. You got to reevaluate the way you're treating people out on the road and in the businesses. Because you're going to get a hair. You are. I don't know what the male Karen is. I think there's a name for it, like Chad.
No, I'm not a Karen. I'm not going to go through each incident, but it was...
How many have there been? Tell me honestly, how many have there been? Have there been more than 10?
No, I mean, there's probably just about 10, and 8 of them happened in 3 years in Florida, so that should, you know, it's a dark, dark period of my life.
But I lived there, too, and I didn't have any incidences. Not even at a bar. Oh, Ken. Ken is the male Karen. Ken. All right, Ken Scholl.
I'm not Ken. I'm not Ken, Karen.
Just, you got to head this off, man. Okay. All right.
I got nothing, man. I want to move right in to our top five because I'm quite excited about it, actually.
I know. And I feel like it's one of those that you're really excited about and put a lot a lot of effort in and really looked up, and I'm going to come in and just give you some garbage that's going to piss you off, and I can't fucking wait.
I know.
All right.
I know.
Look, I evaluated it on some different criteria. So our top five is top five movie soundtracks. What's your number five?
Can you start? I want to know what your number five is, because I want you to set the tone for this top five this time.
Frozen?
Oh, okay. I mean, that's great, actually. I mean, it's on my honorable mention because it's a newer movie, newish movie, I guess. But it definitely deserves to be in the conversation. That was a good one. You did well.
When I look at movie soundtracks, though, I think of songs that you actually are, when you're imagining the movie or you're remembering the movie, you think of the music. It doesn't count if it's got like some awesome song in the credits that makes it onto the soundtrack. It's got to be in movie where you think of the music in the movie. So that's why I would have Frozen at number five.
Well, I stick along the Disney theme. My number five is The Lion King.
All right. I mean, that's some pretty iconic songs, right? I can think of what, Can You Feel the Love and In the Air Tonight. Matata. Oh, yeah, wow.
Yeah. I mean, those are three solid songs right there.
Now I'm actually going to get upset because that probably should be higher on your list. If you can come up with another movie that has three solid songs, like, oh, damn, I know the lyrics to that right now.
It's gonna be hard, but there are definitely, there's definitely four others that are easily top The Lion King on my list.
All right, I mean, I guess I could see the fact that, right, you're not like walking around humming The Lion King. Like, it doesn't come up in other situations. All right, what's your number four?
So my number four is Hamilton.
Is that a movie?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was made into a movie.
I think that's technicality there. I believe that's a Broadway musical.
But it's made into a, I mean, whatever. I can swap it out. I have so many more. I mean,
that's fine.
If you want to play hardball here.
Overrated. It's all right. I watched about 10 minutes of it and was like, wait a minute. This is a story about Alexander Hamilton. I don't care about Alexander Hamilton. About it.
That was one of the best things you've ever said on this podcast.
I don't care about Alexander Hamilton.
I thought about it. It's was a thing about Alexander Hamilton. All right, what's your number four?
Blues Brothers.
Dude, your list is solid. That's a great number four. Once again, it's on my honorable mention, but it's a great number four.
That may also be one of the very few movies in which the stars of it were singing some of the songs. Like Sweet Home Chicago is a classic song from them.
Oh, man.
And that they sing that. That's them.
You could argue that they might be, like, you know, out of all the musicals or whatever, out of all the soundtracks, they might be the most recognizable characters from, like, you know, the movie with the soundtrack. I mean, everybody either knows or has heard of the Blues Brothers.
That's a really good movie, too. I think it's kind of like right around our time. It may be before some of our listeners' time, but that's a good movie to check out. Like, still good today and still kind of funny today. All right, what's your number three?
Grease.
Are you serious? What song from Grease do you like that you're just walking around your house going, tell me more, tell me? Like, you're walking around doing that as in a...
Does it get very far? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I mean, there's multiple numbers in that movie that are just awesome.
All right. The fact that you said numbers sums everything up. Do you like
Don't be angry at Ken.
Are you secretly a show tunes guy? You secretly a show tunes guy? Like, do you like numbers in your movies?
I mean, I'm as I get older, I really like musicals and things getting older. I never would have said that even 10 years ago.
Okay, what are some of the best musicals out there recently then? I don't have any musical knowledge. I would like to know. Yeah, if you're listening. Tell me, what's your favorite musicals? Light a nice candle, get your flowers that you got back there.
See, I would be serious with you if you weren't making fun of me.
Smoke some meat.
Hey, man, I'd like to smoke some meat. I tell you what, Easter is overrated because ham is not good at all. I just want to throw that out there, and I will stand by it. Fight me over it.
Cook it right.
It doesn't matter how you eat ham.
Cook it right.
Cold cut.
Cook it right.
Smoke it. Oven.
Don't you belittle ham in my presence. No, I want to know what these musicals are. I'm legitimately curious that you like so much.
Oh, I mean, The Greatest Showman with Hugh Jackman's amazing. It's not really a musical. Encanto, the new Disney movie, is awesome. I mean, I think that could be listed as a musical. Excuse me, as I kind of threw up there. Saturday Night Fever is awesome. I mean, I could go on and on.
I have rocked the fuck out to Saturday Night Live Fever, Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not?
Well, I mean, edibles helped. I was rocking the fuck out. But I have also rocked out to the Donkey Kong Country soundtrack and thought that was amazing.
This guy's going to belittle me about Hamilton, and he rocks out to the Donkey Kong
I would rather
soundtrack.
Listen to the Donkey Kong Country soundtrack than Hamilton.
Oh, man.
Donkey Kong, it's good. My number three is a tie, Straight Outta Compton and Friday.
Okay. Not bad. I mean, Friday, I don't really remember the soundtrack. Straight Outta Compton's awesome.
Straight Outta Compton's pretty good. Friday's, I couldn't really decide which one of those was better, but I liked them both. Because they had a lot of good songs, but there wasn't one that really just like stood out super in my mind. I like when they were showing like how Dre made his beats. Like, I thought that was cool when he's like that. Like, I love that. That's so, I wish I could do that. I wish I could be a rap producer or any kind of music producer, but I have no
skills. I mean, let's do it. What are we waiting for? I can be a rapper for you.
We're waiting for talent, and that's going to be a long time coming. all right, what are you on?
I'm on my number two, and jeez. I know I'm just gonna put two, I'm gonna make it a double. So it's gonna be 8 Mile and Guardians of the Galaxy.
First of all, my number two is Guardians of the Galaxy as well. You put 8 Mile in there just because you used to be from Detroit.
I don't know if I'm gonna be able to say this for it to make sense, but he even does like a not an acoustic, but. What's it called? An a cappella performance, multiple during the movie. I mean, that's awesome.
It's called freestyling, I believe. Right? Whatever. Musical fan over there with your a cappella. I believe it's called freestyling.
They're good numbers, okay?
Or ad-libbing. You go up to Eminem. How do you think Eminem would feel? It's like, hey, what a great number you had with your a cappella in that movie.
He would never talk to me, let's be honest. Let's be honest.
Talking about how John makes a huge deal about the fact that he's from Detroit, he wears Detroit clothing, just like, and but when it comes down to it, he doesn't have the soul of a person from Detroit because he's talking about musicals and a cappella when it comes to 8 Mile, which is basically the Detroit biography.
I mean, that's not true, but okay.
What movie then sums up Detroit?
Oh, actually, that's easy. RoboCop.
A lot of people getting shot, yeah. Killed in Detroit. A lot of people getting shot in Detroit.
Oh, man. That was a terrible summarization of the city of Detroit. Yeah, RoboCop.
Okay. I mean, I'm from Kansas. It's fucking Twister.
Oh, wouldn't it be Wizard of Oz?
No, it's really probably Twister.
We're not in Kansas anymore. So my number one is going to piss you off, man. I mean, it's going to make you so angry.
My number one is going to shock you. And you'll be like, what? And then you'll hear me explain it, and you might actually agree with me. What's your number one?
Titanic. Oh, God. I wish people could see this, like, in real time, your reactions.
Explain?
I mean, it's one of the biggest grossing movies of all time, highest grossing movies of all time, and I believe the soundtrack was number one for half a year, three quarters of a year. My Heart Will Go On is still one of the greatest ballads
You gotta give it that. I mean, it is a good song. That is,
and the instrumentals are awesome. I mean,
I don't really identify that movie though with the music as much as I do other movies like Frozen or the Blues Brothers, Guardians of the Galaxy, where you identify it with the music. This is my number one, is Star Wars. Because take the music out of that movie and what is it? That movie has music that sets the scene more than any other movie.
I mean,
it's iconic.
I don't think it's a, you know what? I have no issue with it. I actually think you're right. I mean, it has a soundtrack. The soundtracks have done fantastic. I mean, Duel of the Fates from Phantom Menace is probably one of my favorite movie instrumentals of all time.
Numbers?
Is it one of your numbers?
Favorite numbers?
Be quiet, Karen.
So I'm actually kind of I'm not impressed with your list, but you have a great list there, man. Give yourself some credit.
It's not that bad, actually. I don't know anything about music, but I don't have terrible taste in music.
I mean, I would say the only rough spot on yours would probably be like mine with like Guardians of the Galaxy, because yes, it's great and it has a lot of awesome music. But is it going to stand the test of time? I don't know.
I don't think that stands the test of time, but I do think that movie is synonymous with the music in it. Like, that movie's not that great without that music. You take it out. What's in your honorable mention?
All right, here. I have a few. Purple Rain.
Never seen it, but I've heard it's great.
A personal favorite of mine called Streets of Fire. Has Rick Moranis in it from the late 80s.
Never heard of it.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
I get it confused with the other movie about high schoolers. Actually, the two other movies about high schoolers.
The Breakfast Club and Pretty in Pink?
No, the four other movies about high schoolers.
Okay. Transpotting.
Dazed and Confused. Dazed and Confused, which is on my list.
Dazed and Confused, yep. The Crow.
What?
Dirty Dancing. We mentioned Saturday Night Fever. Space Jam, and then Flashdance. And I also, once again, kind of a personal pick here, Top Gun as well.
Yeah, Top Gun's got some pretty iconic music. The only ones that I had that you didn't mention, Caddyshack. I'm all right. Nobody
wants
me. Right, Caddyshack. Think about it.
That's pretty interesting. That's a good one.
I had Trainspotting. The way that I evaluate it is if you think of the movie, then you think of the song comes right up. Like, you don't think that way about Avengers Endgame or, right? Like, I mean, There Will Be Blood.
Wow, look at you knocking out the Daniel Day-Lewis movies. I mean, you picked probably the most. Your number five, I think, is at least of the generation that probably listens to this podcast more than others. That's probably the most recognizable song from any of our choices, I would think.
Let it go.
Let it go.
No. Do you think more people would recognize Frozen or Darth Vader's theme song?
Man, that's tough.
Yeah.
I'll go Darth Vader, probably. I mean, Star Wars is still super relevant. You know, if you've heard that at some point, I would think, if you're over the age of 10.
I would think so. Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. And let us know what you think are some of the best movie soundtracks. We're obviously not really that knowledgeable about music. Look, this list isn't for the critics. This is for the people.